So we're on the bottom of Daf Mem Vav Amin Aleph, and the Gemara just established in the name of Rav Yosef the following principle, that although Rabbi Shimon holds that a Dovrashena Miskaven is a mitigating factor when you don't have Kavana, but whether or not it's Mutal Chatchila, or shall we say it's Pater Aval Asur, and it's Asumir Rabbanon, that depends upon what would happen if, heaven forbid, he would have Kavana. And if we would want to make a Gzera of Shalom Miskaven, Atu Miskaven, that if we allow him to do it without Kavana, maybe tomorrow he'll do it with Kavana. So the Gemara establishes in the name of Rav Yosef that it all depends, there are two rules. If, heaven forbid, he has Kavana, he violates a Doraisa, then even Rabbi Shimon would say, Potter Aval Asu, meaning you're not allowed to do this L'chatchil, we have to be afraid of the possibility of a Doraisa. But in a situation where even in the worst case scenario, if he would have Kavana, he would still not violate a Malacha Doraisa, then Rabbi Shimon would allow it L'chatchil. So in the case of Gorer Kisei V'Savsol, where he's dragging a couch or a chair into his house and it's going through the ground that might make furrows, there Rabbi Shimon would allow it l'chatchil, because even in the worst case scenario, Chas v'Shalom, he has kavana to make these furrows, which is Meleches Koresh, he would not violate a Melacha Doraisa because it's Kilachar Yad, what we call, meaning it's Shalom Kedarko, it's not the normal way that you make furrows when you have a hoe or you have a machresha, a plow. You're only doing it with the legs of the chair, of the couch. But in the case where he's moving a nair one way or the other, and the nair is lit, then by moving the nair, that's a normal way of extinguishing a fire. You know, you move it around and then it blows out. So there, Rabbi Shimon would agree that l'chatchila, we cannot allow you to move that nair while it's lit. So now we're up to...
Did we have a difference between a heavy bench and a light bench?
Well, no, the difference between a heavy bench and a light bench has to do with a different concept. I don't know if we'll get a chance to talk about it today, called psik resha.
Okay.
Psik resha means that even on a Doraisa level, Rabbi Shimon admits that if it's a psik resha, and it's definitely going to happen, then it's asur. That's a case of a heavy bench.
Right. So
but we're talking about a light bench where he may make furrows, he may not make furrows. Okay. So we're up to now Masiv Rava, which is four lines below before the end of Mem Vavim and Beis. And he's going to quote a Mishnah in Kelayim. So a man is a seller, and he has to transport his garments that he's selling from place to place. And in those days, it was if you didn't have a whole carriage to carry all your begadim, then what you would do is you'd wear it. I remember when my kids were young, we used to read them a book about a person who used to sell caps. I forgot the name of the book. It's very cute, a children's book. So they show you all the different caps that he wore in his head, one on top of the other. And he was able to walk without the caps falling. So, mochrik sus, mochrim kedarkom. Those who are selling garments are allowed to wear the garments. Now, you might ask me, you know, why would I think otherwise, right? I mean, obviously, you're allowed to wear the garments. But the answer is, these garments are kelayim. They are a mixture of wool and linen, and he's selling them to goyim. He's not allowed to sell them to Jews, of course, and he's wearing them one on top of the other. Now the law is, the Torah says lo silbash kelayim, which means that you're not allowed to enjoy the warmth of a piece of clothing that's made up of both wool and linen. But here, the condition in this Mishnah, reflecting the Shita Rabbi Shimon, is that this is all conditional on the fact that he doesn't have Kavana. What does it mean he doesn't have Kavana? So during the rainy months, which is called Yemos HaGishamim, there's a certain kind of kavana that he could have to enjoy, and during Yemos HaChama, which are the summer days, there's another kind of kavana. So during the summer days, certain types of garments would protect his body from the hot sun. Now we know today, scientifically, how dangerous the hot sun could be. And during the rainy season, that's called Yemos HaGeshamim, he benefits by warming himself up or protecting himself from the rains, the water that's flowing down from the heavens. And here this Mishnah is reflecting the principle of Rabbi Shimon, of Dorashenu Miskaven, but it's allowing it lechatchila. He's allowed to wear these begadim. Why? Because he doesn't have kavana. Now, when it says he doesn't have kavana, what you have to add here is that he has other clothes that he's wearing. These are clothes on top of clothes, and so forth and so on. If it gets very, very cold or very, very rainy, then it could be the extra clothes will benefit him. But one of the principles and the conditions of violating kilayim is what's called hanas levisha, when you enjoy and benefit from the wearing. There's another Isur in Kilayim, which is a different kind of Isur, when he doesn't wear the beged, but he just wraps it over his shoulders and so forth. Or that's a different thing. That's called Halah. But we're talking about Levisha. And yet the Mishnah allows it. Why? Because he's not having Kavana. Now, the Mishnah records that there were Tznuim. The Tznuim are what we call today in Yiddish Frumers. You know, these were the pious people. And Mafshilin b'makel la'achorehem. You know, they would take these kelayim, begadim, and put it on a stick, you know, like Huckleberry Finn or Tom Sawyer, and they wouldn't wear it. They were afraid maybe they'd have kavana, so they were very, very careful. Fekta Gemara, this is Rava's Kasha, v'ha'acha. In this case, the chi mechaven, if he would, heaven forbid, have kavana, isur doraisa ika, he would violate the isur doraisa of levishas kelayim. And kilo mechaven, shari Rabbi Shimon lechatchila. And yet, if he doesn't have kavana, then Rabbi Shimon allows the lechatchila. We just established the principle, as we saw in the case of Ner, that you're not allowed to do something lechatchila below miskavin. The rabbanon are going to impose an injunction or gzera because you might violate an isa doraisa if and when you'd have kavana. But here's a case where even though you might have kavana, and then you would violate a doraisa of kilayim, levishas kilayim, nevertheless, Rabbi Shimon was making lechatchila. So now we're back to square one as far as the lamp is concerned. This ner doluk. Why does Rabbi Shimon say that you're not allowed to move it from place to place? It's a Dovashenim Miskaven. And if it's a Dovashenim Miskaven, it should be Mutul Lechatchila. Ela Omar Rava. So therefore, Rava says that, and here we start on Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, the Daf for today. Hanach Lener. Shemen upsila hoel v'nase bosis l'dover asur. And at this point, Rabbi Osai, we introduce an explicit Gemara. Till now, we were sort of wavering back and forth that Rabbi Shimon agrees to this category of muktzah called a bosis. Now, a bosis means something that's dedicated for something else, and therefore it's batel. It loses its independent status. And the ner itself, once it's lit, is batel, so to speak. It's secondary to the shemen and the psila, to the oil and the wicks. And therefore, the ner itself becomes a bosis. And even Rabbi Shimon would agree you can't move the lamp while it's lit, has nothing to do with a gzera that maybe he would have kavana for extinguishing. Forget about extinguishing. I couldn't care less. He's not having kavana for extinguishing. He's moving the nair from place to place and he wants it to be lit. He moves it from one table to another. But the problem is a muktzah problem. And it's a muktzah problem which even Rabbi Shimon would accept. in the case of a basis for a mukta. And a basis for a mukta means that this object is serving another object. This object, which in its intrinsically is not mukta, is serving an object that is mukta as the base for that object. And that's what Ner is according to Rava. Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan, Rabbi Chanina, Amar Rav Rumnus. I never heard of Rav Numnus, but apparently he was one of the Tanoim, because Rav Yochanan was a first generation Amor, and he's quoting Rav Rumnus. Lo hiter Rebbe letaltel machta be Ephra. Now machta is something that we know from Masechta Yuma and from the Avodas Yom HaKippurim, when the Kohen Gadol went in lifnai v'lifnim for the haktores lifnai v'lifnim, and he took the ktores in a machta, and a machta is a kind of a pan or a little shovel, and very often that pan was used to move coals, or in this case that we're talking about ashes, and ashes are mukta. And Rav Rumnus, quoted here by Rav Yochanan, says that he asked Rebbe if he's allowed to move a machta, this little pan, that this little shovel, mini shovel that has ashes on it. And guess what? Rebbe allowed him. And we just finished saying that if you have an object which is not mukta, that serves an object which is mukta, that's called a basis, and even Rebbe Shimon agrees it's aser. So how could Rebbe, even if I assume that Rebbe accepted the kula of Rebbe Shimon in mukta, but not in a case of a basis lemukta, so how can he allow you to move this machta? Amale Rav Zera, Rabbi Zera, or Rav Asi, me Amar Rav Yochanan Hachi. Now you're telling me that that Rabbi Shimon, and here it's Rebbe, but Rebbe going according to Rav Shimon is matir, moving the machta. For Tnan, we have a Mishnah. Now, let's point out a little bit as an introduction to this Mishnah. The Mishnah is at the end of Masechta Shabbos, that you can have a case where something is a basis for two different items. So, you know, like, for example, you know, you have this a table, and on the table you have challahs and you have your leichter, you have your candles, your candelabras. So what's the status of the table? And what we're going to learn now is that even though you might have a flame, you know, a burning lamp on the table is not necessarily mukta. Again, there may be other reasons why you can't move the table, but let's say after the flame goes out, the only reason you would not be allowed to move the table would be mukta, with the Bein HaShmashos and the Migu. But here, the table would not be considered perhaps a basis, because you also have on the table your two challahs. Let's see it inside. For Tanan, we have a Mishnah. No sein Adam bino. No tell Adam bino. A person is allowed to carry his child, his son, ve'aven biyado, meaning even though his son is carrying mukta, nevertheless, he's carrying both his son and mukta. Again, you'd have to learn the sugya there, because the sugya itself seems to imply that was a special heter for a child, but we're going to learn it just on a very superficial level, that it's a basis for a davar aser and a davar mutar. O kalkola va'evin besocha. Well, for example, he has a basket and there's a stone inside of it. So wait a minute, how is he allowed to carry the basket? The basket is a basis. Amar Abba Bar Bar Chanan Rabbi Yochanan be kalkola malea peros askinon. that not only is there a stone inside the basket, but also there's a large volume of fruit. Notice the word malea. So the Gemara now, in the name of Rabbi Zera, is medayik from the Mishnah, the way that Rabbah interprets the Mishnah, and the way Rabbi Yochanan interprets that Mishnah, at time of the ispe peri, ho lespe peri lo. It means that because there's a lot of peros on this basket, so we view the basket as a basis for both a dover muktzah, the stone, and a dover that's not muktzah. Again, you have to assume that the peros are more valuable than the stone. That's a fair assumption. But if there were no peros on the basket, you would not be allowed to move the basket. And the assumption is that this Mishnah reflects the shita of Rebbe, or alternatively, you could call it the shita of Rebbe Shimon. In any event, we see clearly that Rabbi Yochanan's interpreted the Mishnah in a way that a basis would be asur, would be mukta. How can you then tell me, the same Rabbi Yochanan, that Rebbe allowed him to move the machta? How could you be allowed to move the machta, that little pan of ashes, when everybody agrees, even Reb Shimon, to the concept of basis lemukta? Ishtomeim b'shoa chado, Rav Asi was confounded by the question, but then v'yomar, he thought about it twice, and he said, hachanami de ispe karten. Now this pan that we spoke about, this machta, was used for incense. And after the incense is all burnt up, and the fragrance, of course, exudes, then what you're left with is ashes. That's muktzah. But, says Rav Asi, the case that Rebbe allowed you to move the machta was ispe karten. There were certain granules of the incense that weren't burnt. And theoretically, you know, again, it would, on Shabbos I wouldn't do this because it might be borer, but you can pick out these granules, these keratin, and they're valuable. Again, I don't know if it's worth all the effort. It's not so expensive, these extra granules, but, you know, for a poor person, let's say, and again, the burning incense back in the day, like we spoke about bathhouses, that was part of the culture. The Gemara tells us in Beitza that they used to burn incense even for the sake of the kalim, that the utensils that they ate from would have absorbed the fragrant odor of the incense. So this was part of the culture. And now it turns out the way that Rav Asi is interpreting the story of Rav Yochanan in the name of Rav Rumnus, that Rebbe was matir moving the machtas because the machta was a basis l'dovra asur, meaning mukta, that's the afer, and l'dovra mutter for the karten. So therefore it makes it similar to the case we have a basket that has a stone and fruits, or you're carrying the child who's carrying a stone. But Abaye doesn't like this. Omer Abaye, karten be Rebbe, this question was asked in the house of Rebbe. Again, if we had a few minutes, we don't have the time, we would describe the wealth of Rebbe. Mi chashivi? In Rebbe's house, would they bother picking out those leftover granules of non-burnt incense? It's basically valueless. And now we get into the question that I think, Michael, you touched on yesterday. When you define something as valueless, is that objective or it's subjective? And here the Gemara seems to assume, and that's what the Gemara is going to prove from a brisa, that it's really subjective. You know, what might be non-mukta for you would be mukta for someone else. V'chitem, if you'll say chazu anim, maybe we should establish a an objective standard and in objective terms, these granules do have value. Okay, Rebbe's is a millionaire. That's different. He's the exception. Varsanya, but we have a Brysa. Now this Brysa touches on Tumas Begadim and the minimum shear for susceptibility to Kabbalah's Tumah. And the Brysa says, Bigdei Aniyim Laniyim, Bigdei Ashirim Lashirim. In other words, when you define something as a Beged and it has to have a certain minimum value and significance to it, it's relative to who you're talking about. So if it's owned, if this garment or piece of cloth is owned by a poor person, then it would be Mekabel Tumah. And to our surprise, if the same Beged is owned by a rich person, he would throw it in the rubbish bin. It's not worth anything for him. And therefore it's not Mekabel Tumah, it doesn't have the status of a Beged. So we see clearly that Chashivus and significance is relative. It's not objective. So the Gemara says, "Aval aniyim lashirim lo." If you have this piece of cloth that would not be considered chashiv at all for a wealthy person because it's inexpensive and it's not valuable, then it's not. It doesn't have a shame beged. It's not chashiv. And the Gemara now makes a parallel to the case of granules of those keratin that are left over mixed into the afer. And in Beis Rebbe, that was valueless. And if it was valueless, you cannot say that this machta was a basis for both mukta and non-mukta. The non-mukta here is completely null and void. It has no chashivas whatsoever. You can't say it's like we gave the example before of shtei lechem. You have a mitzvah of shtei of lechem mishnah. That makes the table holding on to the lechem. That's very chashiv, shtei lechem. So now Abaye has to offer an alternative suggestion as to why Rebbe would permit moving this machta that has Afer on it. It can't be because of the karatin. Ela Omar Abaye. The reason why Rebbe allowed moving the machta is Midi Dahavi Agraf Shel Rei. So this Rabosai in the constellation of Mukta, this is a whole new branch of Mukta, called Graf Shel Rei. I'll give you an example. You have a rubbish bin in your kitchen, and it fills up. Assuming there's no problem of Hotzah to take it out, to the Tzfardeha, and get rid of it, then what about Mukta? I mean, there's nothing in there that's valuable. Obviously you threw it all out into the rubbish bin. But the answer is that comes under a category of Graf Shel Rei. Again, if we had a good couple hours, we would go through the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah and all the other contemporary poskim, what constitutes a Graf Shel Rei. But a Graf Shel Rei, on the simplest level, is something that unnerves your sense of being comfortable in its presence. You can't move around and feel comfortable. You got to get rid of it. It's repugnant. And in the case of Rebbe, again, we're introducing that subjective element. Although the machta with its afer is the afer is certainly not significant, even if it has karatin mixed in. But nevertheless, Rebbe would allow you to get rid of this rei because he felt very uncomfortable in the presence of the rei. Now, before we go on, I want to just give a little bit of introduction to what a machta looks like, so we'll understand the next Gemara. The machta.
Does this have to do
Shabbos? And so on Shabbos, he wants to get rid of the ashes. So he has the ashes in this pan, and Rebbe allows him to get rid of it. It's a basis, and even Reb Shimon accepts the Iser of a basis. The answer is that it's a Graf Shel Rei. And you're allowed to move a Graf Shel Rei, throw out your rubbish if its presence disturbs you. What is the machta? What does it look like? So I told you it was a pan, but what I didn't tell you is that it's a pan that has a cover to it, which is perforated and has holes to allow the fragrance to go out. So you put the spices and the incense inside, you know, you lift up this cover, and then you put a fire to it, you cover it, and as it burns, the fragrance shoots through these perforations, these holes. Amar Rava, Rava rejects Abaye. Shtei tshuvas bedavar. This is not a graf shel rei. Even in the house of Rebbe, it wouldn't be a graf shel rei. Why? Chada first. Graf shel rei mois, v'haylo mois. It's not enough to tell me that, you know, okay, I'm not so comfortable, let me get rid of it. You know, a guy blows his nose in a tissue, pardon me, it's not so aesthetic to talk about that, and he says, you know what, I got to get rid of these tissues. That's not a graf shel rei. Rei means, you know, a baby did what he has to do in a diaper. You know, that's a graf shel rei. Rei means excrement. And that's absolutely repugnant, and it has a bad smell. These are ashes, okay? You know, it's not so nice, you know, the Rebbetzin Rebbe probably said to Rebbe, get rid of these ashes, you know? We don't keep ashes around here in this beautiful castle of ours. Okay, but that's not a graf shel rei. It doesn't have a bad smell to it. It's not something that's intolerable. And therefore, Rava rejects Abaye on that count. V'od, and furthermore, he rejects Rav Abaye because graf shel rei migli v'ay michsit. A graf shel rei is something that is exposed, and you see it. So not only you smell it, but you also see it. Not in the case of the ashes in the machta. The machta, as we said before, is covered. And therefore, it's not a graf shel rei. So again, now we need a third attempt, hopefully a successful attempt, to understand why Rebbe allowed moving this machta. It couldn't have been because of the granules, it couldn't have been because it's a graf shel rei, but rather, it's for a different reason entirely. El Amar Rava ki avinan bei Rav Nachman hava mitaltalinan kanuna agav kitma.
Where was it?
V'afa gav de'ika alei Shivrei Eitzim. So in other words, the ashes here are not mukta, and in fact the Gemara tells a story that happened in the house of Rav Nachman where they allowed moving a kli that had ashes on it. And why is that? Because excuse me, the ashes were not mukta. What do you do with ashes? And the answer is, the ashes have a certain use to it. Perhaps the ashes would cover dirt. Again, we have to understand the sociology here, but just accept it now for the time being. There was some function for ashes. And the Chiddush of Rav Nachman is that even though this kli had not only ashes on it, but it had broken pieces of wood, which is called Shivrei Eitzim, which have no purpose whatsoever on Shabbos, nevertheless he allowed it. And that's the Chiddush of Rebbe. Rebbe said that if this machta has ashes, and inside the ashes there are other pieces that are absolutely mukta, mixed in, the ashes themselves have a function, that's Rav's interpretation, then he's allowed to move the machta because the ashes he had in mind even going into Shabbos, that he wants to use these ashes. Ashes are also meaningful for certain functions. Reminds me of the first Mishnah that we had in this parak about Khatum. You remember Khatum, where he, you know, he sprinkles ashes on top of his gecholim. That wouldn't be mutar on Shabbos, but there are many other uses for ashes. And even though there are chips of wood, Rebbe says you're allowed to move this machta, because since the ashes have a purpose and they're not mukta, therefore I don't have to worry about the piece of wood. So now the Gemara says that's not necessarily true, Rava, because we have a braisa. Meisve, I'll ask you a question from a braisa. The Braisa says, Vishavin, everybody agrees, both Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon, with regard to Mukta, She'im Yeshba Shivrei Psila, that when are we allowed to move the lamp? When it goes out, according to Rav Shimon. That's only because there are no Shivrei Psila. If there were broken pieces of wick that could still be used, then it's also Litalta. Why? Because those pieces of wood, those Shivrei Psila, are mukta. They have no purpose on Shabbos whatsoever. And now the lamp itself becomes a basis for the small pieces of wood. Now, wait a minute. What do you have inside the ner? You've got broken pieces of wick, and you have oil. And if you're telling me that Rebbe, according to Rava's interpretation, allows you to move something, which, because the Efer is non-muk, so you can move the Machta even though there's an addition to the Efer, the Shivrei Eitzim, then how could it be that this Braisa would say that even Reb Shimon would agree that you're not allowed to move the Ner because there are remnants of wick, which are Mukta? Amar Abaye. So it's interesting, Abaye now has rescinded his original interpretation, he accepts Rava's interpretation, and he even defends Rava against the slings and arrows of this kasha from a Braisa, Bigalila Shanu. This Braisa was addressing a very specific scenario, a very specific location in Galil. Apparently there was a scarcity of wicks. You know, the wicks were usually made out of flax, and there was not flax available in the Galil. And that even though these wicks are mukta because they have no purpose on Shabbos, but they are valuable. And they are no less valuable than the oil. In fact, maybe they're even more valuable than the oil in the Galil. And therefore in the Galil, as we said before, like we spoke about the difference between Karten for Aniyim and Karten for Ashirim, here also, when we talk about the chashivas of something, there's a relativity theory. And in Galil, these wicks were very valuable. Even though they were broken wicks, they couldn't get access to wicks. It's like, imagine Hanukkah time and you can't get wicks. You know, there's a scarcity in the market of wicks. So it's very expensive, it's very chashiv, and yet it's muktzah. So you can't tell me that the oil is the ikar and the wicks are the tofel, that the non-muktzah is more chashiv than the muktzah. That's not so. And therefore, the Braisa in Galil establishes that even according to Reb Shimon, you can't move the lamp when there are shivrei psila wicks left in the lamp. So right now, we came to the conclusion that even Rebbe agrees, and even Reb Shimon would agree, that there is a concept of buses, but if you have something that's a buses for two different objects, one of which is muktzah and the other is non-muktzah, then you have to ask yourself which is more chashiv. And if you come to the conclusion that the non-muktzah is more chashiv, then you're allowed to move it and it's not a buses. Now we start a new sugya, Rabosai. Now, by way of introduction, back in the time of the Gemara, and it's pretty much true even in contemporary life, there are a whole bunch of utensils which have parts to it. And you take the various segments and you put them together. Now, when you attach two segments, in order to create a kli, there are many different ways of doing so. The most extreme way of doing so is called litokea. Litokea means to knock nails into it. But there are other ways, you know, where you fit the smaller part into a larger part, and it's much more temporary and less profound. So we're going to talk about a mita shel tarsium. It's a whole to-do here, exactly who these tarsium were. They were certainly belonged to one profession or the other, one occupation or the other, whether they were coppersmiths, whether they were weavers. But they had movable beds, like I always give the example. You have a picture of a hiker, you know, who's up on a mountain. You'll see he's carrying a knapsack, and in the knapsack he's got his folded up bed. But in those days, the folded up bed just meant a lot more than just unfolding it. It was made up of different segments, and you had to put it together. And Levi bar Shmuel Ashkechinu Rabbi Abba Rav Huna bar Chiya. So Levi finds that these two Amoraim, Rabbi Abba and Rav Huna, Havikaimi Apischa Debe Rav Huna, when they were standing at the entranceway into the house of Rav Huna, and they got into a little bit of a discussion, Amar Lahu, Levi turns to the Rabbi Abba and Rav Huna bar Chiya, and he presents the following question: Ma'ula Hachzer Mita Shel Tarsiyim B'Shabbos. Can I put together the various pieces of this bed that was, you know, because the coppersmiths were always on the move, like the hikers, you know, they had this bed folded up, and they took apart its various pieces, and they would assemble it together to make a bed. Is this mutar on Shabbos? Amru lei. So they answered Levi, and they said, Shapir dummy, it's mutar. Now, we're going to see here as we go along that this whole concept of putting together a kli, reassembling it, is a three-way machlokas. There's going to be two opposite polar extremes. One is going to say it's a chi of chatos if you do that, and you violate a melacha d'oraisa. The other is going to say it's mutar l'chatchila, and in the middle we'll have a compromise shita that it's potter aval osur. We once touched on this, you may recall, when we spoke about a menorah shel chulios, a certain candelabra that has various parts to it. We'll get back to that again in a knei menorah. But here we're talking about a mita shel tarsim. And although Levi was in doubt about it, but Rabbi Abban Rav Huna said it was mutter. You're allowed to put it together. It's not a permanent kind of attachment. It's, you know, put in fitting pieces and then you take it apart and put it back together again. That's not called binyan. Now, many Rishonim say that this whole discussion has nothing to do with Melechus Boneh, because we accept the principle of Ein binyan bekelim, that Melechus binyan only applies to something that's mechubra lekarka, that's attached to the ground. But we're going to see various shitas here reflecting different possibilities. Maybe there is binyan bekelim according to this opinion. And if I assume it's Ein Binyan B'Kelim, then putting these pieces together might be a different malach, which is called Makah B'Patish, which means when you complete something. Also, L'Kami De Rav Yehud, again, Levi was still skeptical, so he re-asked the question, this time to Rav Yehud. He wasn't so comfortable with the answer that he got from Rabbi Abban Rav Huna. And when he came to Rav Yehud, Omar, Rabbi Yehuda gave him the following response. Don't you know, ha, Rav Ushmuel, the ruling of Rav and Shmuel? Rabbi Yehuda was a Talmud of both Rav and Shmuel. That got him into deep trouble sometimes, because Rav and Shmuel very often argued. Here in this case, they have a unanimous opinion. The Amri Shavayu, ha-machzer mita shel tarsi, b'shabas chayiv chatos. This is the other extreme. Whereas Rabbi Abba and Rav Huna said, Amita shel tarsim is mutter, you can put it together. There's not even a nisa d'rabbanon. Rav and Shmuel were of the opinion that it's a chi of chatas, a full-fledged melechus boneh, or makah v'patish. In other words, the mita has to be very solid, otherwise, you know, you don't want to sleep on a bed that might fall apart. It's obviously a kind of a takah, meaning he didn't put nails in it, but there is something that is very tight, and it's so tight that it becomes, in that state, permanent. So you've created a permanent kli, and that's a chiv chatos. Meisvei. So the Gemara now again brings another challenge to Rabbi Abba and Rav Huna, this time from Abraisa. And it says in the Braisa, Machzer Knei Menorah, and now the Gemara is comparing the various branches that make up a menorah to the case of the various segments that make up a movable bed, a bed that you can assemble and reassemble and disassemble. And it says that Yechayiv Chatos. However, Knei Sayodim, see, a Knei Sayodim is a little different because he only adds a piece and takes out a piece. He's not really putting together the whole kana. The kana is that stick. What do they call it? You know, the people who are plastering and painting and so forth, they have this big stick. And there's a piece at the end, you know, a bar in a 90-degree angle on top, like a T. And if they want to get to a higher place, so they add another piece. But that's only on a temporary basis. Is lo yachzir, that he shouldn't put that piece in, but im hichzir potter avalosser. In other words, he shouldn't have done so, but it's potter. So again, the real mekoy meleches boneh is in the case of knei menorah. The Gemara now assumes an analogy between knei menorah and the case of mita shel tarsim. And we don't know how Rabbi Abba and Rav Huna could have possibly allowed reassembling a mita shel tarsim. Yet, at the very least, it should be like Knei Sayodim, that pole where he adds a piece, which is certainly also to add on Shabbos, at least on a Drabbanon level, and moreover, according to the Brice in a case of Knei Menorah, and a Mita Shel Tarsi, it might theoretically be like a Knei Menorah, there when he adds a branch to the candelabra, that's already a permanent fixture, and he's Chayav Achatos from Aleches Bone. Excuse me. And once again, logically, we could differentiate between the case of Mita Shel Parsiim, or this case, Mita Shel Tarsiim, and the case of Knei Menorah, because Mita Shel Tarsiim, as we said at the outset, is a bed that you assemble and disassemble and then reassemble. So there is a certain element of a temporary kind of a binyan, which is called a binyan min atzad, meaning it's only temporary. But right now the Gemara thinks that since you assemble this bed, it should be like the Knei Menorah, and it's permanent enough to be considered binyan. Now the Braisa continues by quoting Rav Simoy Omer, Keren Agula Chayov, Keren Pshuta Potur. So again, they had different types of horns that were used as musical instruments, and some of them had, you know, different kind of, like, it was round, and you attach different kind of pipes that made different sounds, do re mi fa sol la ti, and sometimes what you would do is you had perforations in the bass. In the case of a round horn, you needed a professional to create this musical instrument, and you really had to attach it professionally. That's creating a new entity. That's a chiyuv chatos for violating meleches bonet oraisa. And then you had something called a keren pshuta, and that was a different kind of a horn, not a round one, but a straight one, and that didn't require a great technician. Anybody could just follow the page of instructions and put it together, and that would be Potter Avalos, so that would be similar in the case of Keren Pshuta to the case of a Knei Sayod. But anyway, the Braisa certainly says that when you reattach this the pieces of the candelabra together, then you chayv achatos, and that's, you know, nobody contests that. So let's get back to the Mita Shel Tarsiim. How could you, meaning Rav Abba and Rav Huna, how could you allow putting together this bed on Shabbos? So at this point, the Gemara actually leaves Rabbi Abba and Rav Huna on the out. You know, there's no way you can reconcile this brisa of Knei Menorah with Mita Shel Tarsiim according to Rabbi Abba and Rav Huna. But Amor Omer Ki Haitan. But maybe we can still support Rabbi Abba and Rav Huna as far as a Mita Shel Tarsiim being mutter, based on a different Tana. This Sanya, we have another Braisa of Milbenos Hamita Vekaros Hamita Ulevach Ulevach. What does it say there? Ulevachim. Ulevachim Shel Skivas. So again, what they used to have is they used to have a bed that had legs to it, and the legs would stand on some sort of round structure, and there was a socket, and you put it into that socket. So we have bed sockets and bed legs. We also have a bow, like when you have a bow, and you want to shoot the arrow, so you put something, you know, to hold the arrow in place. And in all these cases, lo yachzi, you shouldn't attach it or put it together on Shabbos. So you had the bed legs and you wanted to put this socket into the bed leg or in the table and so forth and so on. But im hechzir patur, and if you turn to now to Daf Mem Zayin Amud Beis, it says patur aval asur. In other words, the Rabbanan would asur it. But lechatchila, as far as the Torah is concerned, because this is kind of a temporary thing that you assemble and reassemble, therefore, on a Torah level, it would be mutter. It's only Asim Rabbanan, but we're going to get to Rav Shimon Gamliel in a second. But v'lo yiska, but you have to make sure that there's no haskar. Haskar means that you're knocking nails. V'im toka achayv chatas. That's undeniable. That if you reassemble a kli and you knock it in a permanent way with nails, or like we spoke about the kana agula where you need karen agula where you needed a technician, that has permanence. That's certainly meleches pone. And finally, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Omer imayu rafui mutar, that if you attach different kinds of pieces without a nail and it's a loose connection, then you're allowed to do it even lechatchila. And Rav Huna and Rav Chia, Rav Abba and Rav Huna, they understood that the mita shel tarsiyim is a fit, but it is a very loose fit. It's roughly. That's not the other shittas. Those shittas who thought that the mita shel tarsiyim is a chiv chatos, they thought it was a permanent kind of fix. Again, it's not permanent, but it's close to permanent, and it's a tight fit. It's not roughly. Bei Rav Chama havi mita glalanisa. So back in the house of Rabbi Chama, they had a bed that was also put together, and it was assembled and disassembled and reassembled. Havi mahadrile biyom etavan yontif. They actually would reassemble it. Amalu ahura bana leRava my daitech. How do you understand? I don't know why Rava is guilty, but he has to defend what went on in the house of Rabbi Chama. That I don't understand. But anyway, my daitech, what's the underlying logic here? Binyan min atzad, it's only a temporary kind of binyan. And therefore, since it's loose and the loose connection, therefore you're allowed to do this. And they actually put this together and they assembled this bed on Yontif. I don't get it. There's certainly, grant me that there's some sort of drabanan here. And Amar Leh, Ana, again, I don't know Amar Leh, it's like Rava speaking out of the mouth of Rav Chama, I don't know. But Ana, Ki Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Sfir, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that the Hayarafui Mutter, that if it's a loose connection, then you're allowed to put it together, even Lechatchila. Now we learn the last Mishnah in Perek Kira, and Emir Tzashem, if we get a chance, we'll make a little hadron here on Perek Kira, and maybe we'll start the Mishnah in Bamet Tomnim. We'll see how much time allows us. Nosnim kli tachas aner lekabel nitzotzos, but velo yitein lesocho mayim. So he's allowed, you know, he's got this lamp that's lit going into Shabbos. And what happens is there are sparks. There are sparks that are falling this way and that way, and that could be very dangerous. And we'll see that the Gemara is going to allow you to put the kli to make sure to separate, you know, to wedge between the nitzotzos that are falling from this lamp and the ground or the table or whatever it is that you want to protect. Only on the condition that there's no water in that vessel. Because then he's extinguishing the sparks and he's in violation of Meleches Mechabe. Now, this Meleches Mechabe is what you call grama. And this Mishnah introduces the Sugya of Gram Kibui. The Sugya of Gram Kibui is later on in Masechta Shabbos. There's a fire and it's moving towards a certain direction. Are you allowed to put vessels or barrels full of water in the direction, in the way that the fire is moving? The fire will then hit the barrels. The barrels will explode. The water will now extinguish the fire. That's called Gram Kibui. That's indirect causing a Kibui. So first the Gemara wants to ask a different question. How could you allow me, even if the utensil has no water in it, there's no issue of kibui, to place it on Shabbos underneath this lamp to catch the sparks? Now that was the daf I asked you to do last Shabbos on your own, that you're not allowed to take a non-mukta object and make it into mukta. And now once the sparks will fall into this utensil, this receptacle, that receptacle now becomes mukta. And you're not allowed to move a kli on Shabbos that's non-muktzah when it becomes muktzah. Amar Rav Huna b'reid Rav Yeshua, nitzotzos ein ben mamish. Which means that as soon as the sparks make contact, you know, even sometimes in the air, but certainly when they hit the utensil, they're gone. There's no material substance to them, and therefore that's not considered muktzah. You know, you can't say that the kli is now muktzah because it holds on to these sparks. It doesn't hold on to these sparks. The sparks are garnished, garnishment garnished. But now we get to the issue of gram kibui. V'lo yitein l'socha mayim neshu mechaber lema tnan stomach Rav Yossi di omar gram kibui osur. So Rav Yossi doesn't allow you to put these barrels in the direction of the fire, because since the barrels are full of water and he calculates that the water is going to extinguish the fire, he's not allowed to do that because he's gorem kibui. And here too, by putting water into the vessel that's going to receive these sparks, he's causing the kibui of the sparks, the tizbara. You're not going to help me here with Rav Yossi. Amar diomar Rav Yossi v'shabbos, but b'erev Shabbos miomar. Rav Yossi never prohibited you from putting these barrels on erev Shabbos that are full of water in the direction of the fire, and they'll extinguish the fire when they burst on Shabbos. He's allowed to set that up on erev Shabbos. So gram kibui is only also on Shabbos itself. V'chitema hachinami v'shabbos. And if you'll tell me that our Mishnah is talking about an Isur Shabbos, and Rav Yossi says the Gram Kibui is Osur on Shabbos, not an Erev Shabbos, but on Shabbos, he says, but what about a Braisa? A sign you have a Braisa that says, and this Braisa is embellishing our Mishnah, Nosin Kli Tachas Haner Lekabel Nitzotzos B'Shabbos V'Ein Tzorch Lom V'Erev Shabbos. So the Braisa explicitly says that you're not allowed to place a vessel full of water to catch the sparks underneath the candelabra, even if it's Erev Shabbos. But certainly, you're not allowed to do this on Shabbos itself. May Erev Shabbos, V'ein Tzorch Lover M'Shabbos. So if this vessel has water in it, you're not allowed to put it there even on Erev Shabbos, and certainly not on Shabbos itself. So the prohibition against putting this vessel with water in it applies even on Erev Shabbos. So that's not going to work with Rav Yossi. So you want to interpret this Mishnah as reflecting the sheet of Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi would agree that if you set up a system on Erev Shabbos that's going to cause a kibui on Shabbos, you're allowed to do that. So imagine, you know, if you were a fireman, and on Erev Shabbos, you can somehow get that, you know, that those, you know, get that hose and somehow set up the hose that 5 minutes later on Shabbos it's going to extinguish a fire. Then, if it's done begrama, then you'd be allowed to do that, even according to Rav Yossi. Elom Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi says you misinterpreted that Mishnah. Filu tema rabbanon. Even though the Rabbanan reject the principle of Gram Kibui, and that might have repercussions in all Malachas, that if you do it Begrama, at least on one level and at the Reis level, it's not a violation. Shiny Hoch Mineshim Makarves Kibuyo. What does this mean, Makarves Kibuyo? At the very moment that he pours the water, what happens is the sparks are shooting out of this candelabra. He's pouring water into the vessel, and maybe the water will hit the spark midair. Gram kibui would be if the water hits the bottom of the vessel and then the spark falls in. But imagine a scenario where two things happen in sync. On the one end, he pours the water, and on the other end, the sparks are shooting. And immediately, simultaneously, there is a contact between the spark and the water midair. So every second that he's pouring the water, he's putting out some of those sparks. So as the water is flowing down, is pouring down into the vessel, it's hitting the sparks that are shooting out of this candelabra. And that's called kibui mamish. That's direct extinguishing. Hadron Alecha Perikira. Hadron Alecha Perikira. Now a quick introduction. We have about 5 minutes just to introduce the next perek, which is called Atmana. We've discussed this on various occasions, and the law is as follows: you're not allowed to insulate a tavshil. You know, you have a hot pot going into Shabbos, and you want to insulate it. So we're going to have a whole discussion about different materials, and the materials fit into one of two general categories. There's something called a Davar Mosif Hevel, and then there's a Davar She'eno Mosif Hevel. A Davar Mosif Hevel means that you insulate it with something that's so hot that it traps the heat in a way that it comes even hotter and hotter. And we're going to see the physics of it as we go through this parak. And there's something else which is Eino Mosif Hevel, that by wrapping around your tavshil, your pot, you will retain the heat, preserve its level, but it would not increase the heat. That's Eino Mosif Hevel. The word Hevel means heat. And here's the difference between Hatmana on Erev Shabbos and Hatmana on Shabbos. On Shabbos, Hatmana is Asur. The only Hatmana that we might allow, and that's going to be a sugi in this perek, is something cold. Sometimes you do Hatmana in something cold so that it retains its cold temperature. That's something different. But if you're doing Hatmana on something's hot, then if you want to preserve its heat, you're not allowed to do this active Hatmana on Shabbos, even if it only preserves the heat. If on the other hand it's Erev Shabbos, then we're going to allow you to do Atman on Erev Shabbos in a Dover She'eino Mosif Hevel, but in a Dover Mosif Hevel, it will be awesome in Rabbanon, because that's very similar to the case of the Kira, and we have this Gzera called Shema Yatmin Beremes. So Bli Neder, tomorrow we'll start Perek Bamet Tomnim. Again, we're going to need a dictionary here because it's one of these sugyas where a lot of these descriptions of reality and different materials are so foreign to us, we'll have to figure them out. So that will do Emir Tzim tomorrow. So I wish everyone a great day.
Rabbi Berzin?
Yes.
I missed it at the beginning. Who is Nifta?
My father-in-law passed away.
Oh, Baruch Dan.
Yeah. And the Levi was yesterday. So we're dedicating our learning. Yeshua Ben Cyril, who passed away, that's Gershon's brother-in-law, and to my father-in-law Chaim Ben Altachai Bela.
Very soon.